Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I have for you this week a short version of the story of Taylor, Sean, and Alan. Now, if you've been listening for a while, you know that Taylor Toler was my niece and why I have this podcast, and you already know all this stuff. As I'm currently on a break from my regular episodes, I thought you all might enjoy hearing a compressed refresher on the case. My original episodes in season one are both quite long, and they do go into a lot of details, and I think they're still worth listening to if you haven't done that already. But if you are a newerish listener, then you might not even know this story. I'm going to be back again very soon with new episodes, and I hope that you're going to join me for season 5. And in the meantime, I hope that you enjoy this summary of the murders of Taylor Toler, Sean Boschuk, and Alan Pennylegium.
You obviously have a very high tolerance for murder.
My heart that I'll never be able to get back.
May God bless your dark, broken soul.
Back in season one of the podcast, as a lot of you know, that I did a two-part episode, which was about an hour each episode, on my personal story about the murder of my niece Taylor Toler and of Sean Boschuk and Alan Pennylegium. And many of you listened and many of you watched both of them on YouTube, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. But they are quite long, and often people just want the meat and potatoes of the story. And to be perfectly honest, I'm still a bit bitter about the coverage that has gotten out there. Just so badly researched and no thought or care about the victims has been put into it. So here is just the facts version. If you do want interviews with my family members and friends of Taylor's and details of the text messages, the full 911 call, and a much deeper dive, then you can find it on season one of the podcast from October of 2021, or you can find it in the back catalog of videos on YouTube. The lovely and vivacious Taylor Toler was born February 22, 1994, here in Calgary to my lovely and amazing sister Joanne, and she completely changed the dynamics of our family. Joanne became a mom, my mom Joan became a grandma, and I became an aunt, which is a position that I treasured and I still do today for Joanne's remaining children. Taylor grew into a very kind, very sweet young lady who was generous with both her time and her energy. She spent a lot of time with my mom, her grandma, and Grandpa Ted, who everyone calls Papa. Grandma and Taylor were very, very close, and their relationship continued to be close even after Taylor had moved out onto her own. There is really no way of describing a person after they're gone to people that didn't know her other than to say that she was the type of person that cried when she was happy and when she was sad, and she genuinely cared about people, and that I loved her very much, and she always made me laugh. She was gentle and kind to her younger siblings and my children, who were her younger cousins. And one of the things that I often say about the grief over homicide is that it is unique in its own way. When someone dies from an illness or even a car accident, you don't normally have to sit in court and see autopsy photos and listen to testimony and victim blaming, which is a sore spot in the media for me, not just for Taylor, but for Sean and Alan. Sean in particular has taken on some very heavy victim blaming. In high school, Taylor became friends with and dated for a time a boy named Adam Pennylegium. But very quickly, as you sometimes do in high school, they both realized that they were really better off as friends. And that's when she met Adam's brother, Dustin Duthie. Adam and Dustin were stepbrothers and lived with their parents, Sean Boschak and Alan Pennylegent. Sean and Alan had been married when all the kids were very little, and they were a blended family, with Alan bringing into the brood Adam and David, and Sean bringing Dustin and her older sister, who I have never named to protect her privacy. She had long since moved out on her own during the events of this story anyways. Together, they had a son named Jordan, who was heavy into football. His dad, Alan, was a very popular football coach to the Calgary Hilltoppers, so they were able to bond over the love of the game. In his day job, he worked in sales for Keurig Canada, and Sean was a holistic nurse. When the boys became teenagers, there were some troubles. Dustin wasn't a particularly respectful character and got involved in drugs, creating some friction in the family. Taylor was enamored with Dustin and his bad boy image, and thus began a very codependent and worrisome relationship when they started dating in and around 2014. When first meeting Dustin, he was cocky and he came off like one of those guys that likes to act tough, but is really just kind of a coward, which turns out to be a pretty accurate assessment of him. No one really cared for Dustin, and we tried, believe me, we tried, to get her to see that, as cliche as it sounds, she could do a lot better. Taylor was articulate and funny and attractive, and although she liked to have a few drinks here and there, and probably did partake in recreational drugs, anytime I saw Taylor at family gatherings or whatnot, she appeared sober. And the autopsy report does not show drugs in her system. I think I maybe saw her tipsy at a family wedding, but I never saw anything concerning about her with drugs. Now, I'm just saying this stuff because as the story has gotten coverage, there are things that I really want to clear up before we even get there. Yes, we all tried to get Taylor to leave Dustin. Yes, Sean and Alan were stern with Dustin and were trying to get him to clean up his act. And no, Adam wasn't planning any coffee dates with Dustin or trying to get a hold of him. That is just made up, completely false coverage. They were not friendly at the time of these events. And lastly, Taylor did not dump Adam for Dustin. And at the time that they had met, Taylor had not seen or been involved in any of the family incidents that ID Discovery says happened, other than one where Adam and Dustin got into a fight in Dustin's car one time. Anyways, we didn't like him, you could say that. But Taylor did. And like most codependent and abusive relationships, she would break it off and go back and break it off and go back, etc., etc. Always quite secretive about when they were together, and thus we didn't hear much from Taylor during those times. She was 24 at the time and had been living out of the family home since she was about 19. When they were broken up, she was around and was her usual bubbly and happy self. My mom was usually the one that she reached out to during a breakup season, and my mom would always welcome her back into the fold. So when Taylor wasn't with Dustin, she was very much in almost constant contact with my mom. And this back and forth, on again, off again, went on for about 4 years. In early July 2018, when Taylor was 24, she packed up all her stuff, abandoned her apartment where she was living on her own and working, and went out to Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan to pick up Dustin, who had called her once again distraught, likely high and upset about something or other. Taylor was always Dustin's savior, something called trauma bonding that we talked about in the Donna Jones case, and she hated seeing anyone unhappy or upset, and she felt that he really needed her. Only when she got there, Dustin was high and acting, I don't know, like Dustin. So she'd had enough and drove them both back to Calgary, wound up on Dustin's parents, Sean and Alan's doorstep, and Sean was rather livid and wanted Dustin to get into a drug rehab program, and Taylor had agreed with that because she knew that things had gotten out of control with his drug use. Taylor wasn't allowed to stay at Sean and Alan's place because of the relationship that everybody knew was pretty volatile, and she was concerned that them being together would derail Dustin agreeing to go into a program where he would have to be away from Taylor. So she was now looking for a new place to live and a new job, again. Dustin was allowed to stay at his parents' house in the basement, but under the condition that he got into rehab. Now, here in Alberta, rehab is free, but there is a waiting list. So while waiting for a bed, he could stay there, which was him and his two dogs in his parents' basement. Every parent's dream for their 25-year-old drug-addicted son. Oh, and I guess I should mention that Dustin's drug of choice was both steroids and methamphetamines. On July 24, 2018, Taylor sent a text to my mom that she had found a place in Forest Lawn in the Applewood Court Apartments. But the furnace was broken and the heat was running even though it was summer and she really needed a fan. So my mom and Papa had made plans to get one and to drop it off for her. But in the middle of the night, she had sent a message to my mom from her tablet telling her that Dustin had shown up messed up on drugs and had taken her phone. What my mom didn't know is that during this fight, he had also pulled a knife on her.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So my mom, when she woke up and got the message, she told her she's going to bring her a new phone with the fan, but she'd better be serious this time if he showed up again to call the police. And she said that she would. And she also mentioned that she was planning on watching the dogs at Sean and Alan's place while they were away in Hawaii with Jordan for a football conference, which was to take place at the end of July. Now, the Penny Legions actually had four dogs living with them. There was a white pit bull that belonged to Dustin and Taylor together named Polaris, another pit bull, and this one was just Dustin's, a brown pit bull named Jevin that belonged to Jordan, who was 17 at the time, and a black and white border collie named Odie that was the family dog and Alan's baby boy. My mom thought she was kind of nuts because it's going to give Dustin a reason to be hanging around her. But Taylor said, no, he's going into rehab. He's not going to be around. And this time she was serious about leaving him, which is all stuff that we had honestly heard before. But you never know, right? Maybe this was the time. Regardless, when my mom and papa dropped the phone and the fan off, she reiterated to Taylor, call the cops if he shows up again. And that night, my mom and her texted back and forth a bit on her new phone. And then the next day, crickets. My mom texted a few times, got nothing back, so she called around to the rest of us to see if anyone had heard from her. Something just felt really off to her. Meanwhile, Dustin was at his parents' house on the other side of town in Hidden Valley, just being a drain on society and doing a lot of drugs and making his mom, Sean, stress out about their upcoming trip because he was still there and was now complaining that he didn't want to go into rehab and where the hell was Taylor? She's supposed to be watching the dogs and just general stress that us moms who live our lives for everyone but ourselves worry and stress about. On the evening of the 29th of July, so about 2 or 3 days after Taylor's last text message, and just before 6 p.m., Dustin sends a Facebook message to my mom asking if she knew where Taylor was. My mom, seeing this message, having never heard directly from Dustin before and just getting that bad feeling, called the police and reported her missing. And an officer went to her apartment, but all he could do was just knock, didn't get an answer, and then left. At 7:36 p.m. on the 30th of July, my mom got a Facebook message from Dustin's mom, Sean Boschuk. Hi, Joan. Can you let me know that Taylor is okay? Dustin is quite concerned about her, and neither he or I have gotten any responses to messages we have sent to her. Now we are both worrying as it's been a few days. Thanks. I'd really appreciate it, Sean. At 9:06, my mom replied that she'd reported her missing to the police and that they were already working on finding her. And unfortunately, it was likely this response from my mom that set into motion the next events. As was normal for Sean, on the morning of July 31st, 2018, Sean sent a text to a friend and coworker at 5:52 a.m. Shortly after, and we have to conjecture a little bit about this, Dustin came up the stairs from his basement suite, and there was a confrontation, likely about where the hell is Taylor and why did her grandma report her missing to the police and what did you do? And he attacked her in the kitchen where she was sitting at a kitchenette table, grabbing her by the hair, pulling clumps of it out into his hand, and stabbed his 52-year-old mom 6 times. He then dragged her body into the living room and concealed it with a plastic sheet, much like a shower curtain, before starting the process of cleaning up the mess that he'd made. Alan had been upstairs, either asleep or in the shower, and heard commotion going on downstairs. So he came down the stairs with Odie, the family dog, trailing behind him. Upon seeing the horror that was in front of him of his wife of 20 years laying under a sheet and blood everywhere, at the base of the steps, Dustin attacked him as well, stabbing him 8 times. 3 of the stab wounds were deep into his abdomen. In the scuffle, Odie was slashed on the body and basically disemboweled. He then dragged his dad's body into the main level bathroom, leaving him laying there with Odie panting, guarding him while he himself was dying, loyal to his human until the very end. He did also try to slash the throat of Polaris, the dog that he shared with Taylor, and put her in his mom's car in the garage and locked her in. She, however, survived and has since been adopted by a loving family. Dustin then showered, shaved his head, grabbed his dad's wallet and keys, and drove his car to a liquor store near Taylor's apartment building on the south end of town, buying a bottle of whiskey and I believe a bottle of Sprite, drove to Taylor's building and opened the first set of doors before realizing he didn't have a key fob to enter the second set of doors. So he sat on the stoop outside of the building and called 911, and here is just a snippet of that call.
Calgary Police, what is the address of your emergency?
Apple Village Court.
Tell me exactly what happened, Dustin.
I murdered my girlfriend in this apartment last week, and I murdered my parents this morning. And that is where I'm going to end it.
And what was the last part?
I murdered my parents this morning in their own home.
And are you and everyone else safe right now?
Everyone else is safe, yep.
So where did this happen this morning?
This morning it happened at 10130 Hidden Valley Drive, Northwest.
That's your parents' home?
Mm-hmm.
You said you have a knife on you?
Mm-hmm.
What type of knife is it?
I'm not sure exactly what type of knife it is, but it's 6-inch blade.
Okay, just stay with me here. Where's your girlfriend right now, up in 307?
No, I don't know.
You're trying to go and see her?
I am.
Okay. Okay, I want you to tell me what happened, okay?
What day?
What happened this morning?
Morning? To be quite honest, I'm not exactly sure. I don't know why I did it. What I did.
And what did you do?
I killed both of my parents.
So what happened there this morning?
I stabbed both of my parents to death.
It turns out that on the early morning hours of July 26th, 6 days before, he had come to visit Taylor, and yes, once again it appears that all was forgiven, and they came and went from the apartment a few times, probably for cigarette breaks. They were both smokers, and Dustin was a chain smoker. At 4:03 a.m., they entered Taylor's apartment together, and Taylor got undressed for bed. They got into bed, they were spooning, and for reasons that are still very unclear and confusing and just painful, he slit her throat with a hunting knife, the same knife that he would later use to kill his biological mom and stepdad that had raised him since he was 3 years old. As she was laying on her side at the time, he left her on the bed, just like she'd been sleeping, and pulled a sheet up to tuck her in. And then he left the apartment, locking the door behind him and trailing with him a bed and a bag, which is kind of like a suitcase on wheels. After his 911 call, when the police arrived, his douche canoeery came out and he was put into the police car, where he belligerently asked repeatedly for a cigarette and referred to one officer as fuckface. Also saying when he was read his rights on the murder of Taylor, he says guilty as charged. And when asked if he wants a lawyer, he said, sure, why not? He was questioned briefly by Detective Dave Sweet, who says it was one of the only times in his career where he requested another officer to stand guard at the door because he was still very volatile. He refused to answer any questions and was sent to the Rocky View General Hospital on suicide watch under guard. He was later moved to the Calgary Remand Center. After all of this debacle happened, the matter was still investigated because they wanted a very tight case against him. So DNA was tested, blood splatter was analyzed, and autopsies were done, all of which was horrible to listen to and see, let me tell you, and adds a whole other layer to our grief. Adam and David received Alan's car back from evidence and found in the trunk a ball of electrical tape, thought to be garbage, but when unraveled, contained a note, most of which is completely unreadable. But it does say that he killed Taylor because, quote, pure want of blood, I ran my blade across her neck, wanting to feel cold steel run through human flesh, that urge to feel the soul of another human being leave their body. In late March 2021, at the start of the trial, he decided to plead guilty to 2 counts of second-degree murder and 1 count of first-degree murder. Now, first-degree murder for his dad because it was the killing of someone that was a witness to a crime, which is automatically first-degree. And on March 26th, we got to read our victim impact statements, which basically talked about how amazing and wonderful these three people were and how much we've lost, which is basically the future of watching lives unfold. I bawled my eyes out during mine, but it is where the title of my podcast comes from when I said that he had a million other choices the day that he killed Taylor and the day that he killed his parents. Dustin cried during all of the proceedings, but I didn't find it to be remorse, just regret for himself. When asked if he had anything to say, he stood up, barely glanced at us, and mumbled, "I'm not going to stand here and try and ask you guys for forgiveness for what I did, because I understand what happened is inexcusable. If I could go back and take back everything that I did and give my life in order to bring back these three beautiful fucking souls, I wouldn't be standing here today. I'm sorry." Who swears in court? Oh, right. Dustin does. On April 8, 2021, Dustin was sentenced to a life sentence with no eligibility for parole for 35 years. That has since changed. In May of 2022, there was a new law that said that anything more than 25 years eligibility for parole was considered unconstitutional and just basically inhumane or whatever. Justice Glenn Pullman said he committed three consecutive murders of members of his intimate circle, each exceeding in brutality and violence the one before it. The callous abandonment of Miss Toler's body for 5 days, followed by the murders of two more family members, are uniquely reprehensible. The adverse considerations are what appear to be a cold, methodical approach to following up his murders with showering, some attempts to clean up the scenes of evidence, and a demonstrated capability of impulsive and violent conduct. The effect of this killing spree on friends and family of the victims is incalculable. Dustin is currently serving his sentence at the Edmonton Institution, which is a max security facility that houses about 200 inmates, including terrorist Omar Khadr, Harvey Andres of the Grim Reapers motorcycle gang, who managed to escape twice, and serial killer Alan Legree. He's had a few escorted leaves for doctor's appointments, and as far as I know, he continues to fail his drug tests. You will be surprised to hear this, but myself, my sister, and my mom have actually forgiven Dustin. We have no plans to visit him or anything, but for our own peace, we have let it go with love and continue to cherish our really good memories with Taylor. Personally, it's maybe not so much forgiveness, as I don't really think about him or care about him at all. I do not, however, believe that Jordan, Adam, or David, or their sister feel the same and are still rather angry and bitter, which I don't blame them, as it's their parents that they've lost, and Adam and David were in their early 20s at the time, and Jordan was only 17 and no longer has his mom to offer comfort and his dad around to complain about the thermostat. It's the little things that you lose that wind up affecting you the most. After the sentencing, ID Discovery did an episode of Evil Lives Here, focused completely on Dustin and the family dynamics, essentially hinting that Sean was to blame for not being stern enough with her adult son, and so far every YouTube and TikTok video on the case just basically summarizes that episode. I'm a little salty over that. So here was the short and dirty and very true version of the events of the murder of my beautiful and amazing niece Taylor Toler, of Sean Boshak and Alan Pennylegion, and of course Odie the family dog. If you have questions or want clarity on some of the events, the two-part long version of my story should probably answer that. And if not, you can email me at amillionotherchoices@outlook.com, or I am on Instagram. Please don't send messages of comments about how what we could have done, should have done, or what you would do in the circumstances, because believe me, people that have lost someone through a homicide, no matter what the circumstances, we blame ourselves enough as it is, and we just really don't need to have that added to it. And for YouTube watchers, A Million Other Choices is actually a podcast. So there are a lot of episodes available to listen to that are not on this platform if you enjoy my storytelling. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'm going to be back again soon with a regular episode.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.